Alright, so this is a tutorial. It's not a formal lecture or advertisement for my publications. There will be some of my publications, but from the old times. There are two reasons for which I volunteered to give this tutorial. First was that during Lars' tutorial, there were several questions when Lars talked about CV's evolution, and it was not his subject, so I decided that if there are still such questions, why couldn't I ask them, since I know the answers, or I know why the answers are unknown. And second was a mail by Carles, said that after Ed's talk, that there's an interesting preprint, in fact, accepted paper in APG Letters, about circumbinary disk driving evolution of a pre-supernova type 1a. So I decided to have a look at this paper, which is total nonsense. Yeah, I know, it is total nonsense. It is total nonsense. Lars, on the contrary, I address myself to the editor of Statistical Journal Letters and say, look, what are you publishing? I mean, I will tell you at the end, if you have the question, what the paper is about. But then I realized that there's a series of papers on circumbinary disk and CV evolution and binary evolution in general that I should have read, especially that they've been written by my close collaborators for my students, etc. But I somehow thought that, you know, circumbinary disk, who cares? I mean, it cannot be a serious alternative. And I've changed my mind, especially, you will see, especially that the problems with the so-called standard model of CV evolution seems to be, I mean, so big that I think one should look for alternatives, and circumbinary disks are not as stupid, they're quite realistic in a sense, and in fact, circumbinary disks, or signals from, or traces, I would say, of circumbinary disks has been found already in CV. So the plan is the following. I will show you what is the standard model, what is it based on, why it don't work, and how circumbinary disks could work. But this is a question of the future. Now, I'm not going to say how CVs are related to supernova type 1a. This was already mentioned by Lars. They are certainly related to novae that were dealt at the first week, because novae are cataclysmic variables. So I don't have to justify it. So, okay, after this introduction, let me go to the subject of my talk. Okay, so if you plot what is the best observed property of CVs, that is their orbital periods, and you make a histogram, you have this very well-known diagram, which represents, I think there are here 510 CVs in total, I think. And we will be interested in CVs that in which the companion is a hydrogen star. These guys here are the favorite subject, or one of the favorite subjects of Lars, and he knows all that is to be known about this. I won't talk about them because they are not but they are this is not my was not my intention. I will edit it. Okay. There is clearly a minimum period here. There are two guys here that are very strange because they are hydrogen and they. Okay, this is the minimum period is around 80 minutes. This one I think is 60. The one is 50. It seems understood what happened to them. They went through a different channel of evolution to the thermal unstable transfer at some moment. So the two don't spoil this the statistics. Clearly there is a wall here terminating at around 80 minutes. There is the famous or infamous period gap, so there's definitely statistically you can use all the statistical tests you want. There is a dearth of systems between around 2 hours and 3 hours. I mean, the real fact is 175 hours, 275 hours, etc. And the aim of a model of evolution of CVs is to explain this diagram, because this diagram, of course, doesn't represent the birth state of CVs, because we know that at least gravitational radiation exists, and I'm not going to repeat what Ed said in his tutorial. You know that gravitational radiation removes angular momentum from the orbit. The orbit shrinks, and this, if a CV is burned here, it will end up. And there's the question where, and why is this very strange? Why there's a period minimum, and why there's a period gap? These are the two questions. And then there's a third question. This doesn't appear here because you will see that in any model, except for the circumbinary disk of evolution, there should be much more systems at near the period minimum. In fact, what the standard model gives is that most CVs, since they evolve to a shorter period, they should be below the gap, and there will be a huge spike of system near the period minimum. And clearly it's not observed.
Okay, but it's a tutorial, right?
Yes. And this is something I'm going to talk about. It's a recent paper by Retta Pretorius and collaborator that shows that, okay, this was the hope and the explanation. It's okay, there are selections effects, etc. Clearly for the spike at the minimum period, people couldn't find a selection effect. I participated in this in trying to find a selection effect. There's no way of finding selection effect. It says, but now there's a very rigorous paper by Pretorius, Knigge, and Kolb. They took, I will talk about it. This is one, these are two of my slides. They took a uniform, the PG, the Palomar green sample of CVs. And they applied they constructed a Monte Carlo code that takes into account all possible selection effects, flux limit, galactic height, Glucka, etc. And they came to the conclusion. You asked me the question, so I will say what will be in, I don't know, in 10-15 minutes, that there's no way selection effect can explain the conflict between the predicted distribution, the intrinsic distribution, and what is predicted by the model. And that's why I decided to look at this. After reading this paper, I said, okay, I've been in this business for 20 years or something, and maybe not recently, but I decided no, it cannot work. I mean, there's no excuses. It was clear, years ago. There's no excuses. But the model, you see, it's physically, it's very well. I mean, the explanation is fantastic, and all this physics. There's no, except for one thing. There's no fancy physics. It doesn't work. It's. Yes.
Can you just remind us what would be the luminosities of the systems that would be in that region?
In this region?
Yes, right.
The luminosities, okay, these are CVs. The luminosity is not a well-defined concept because most systems here are variable. They're erupting systems. So in quiescent, they are very weak, but then they go to 10 to the 33, 34 Hz per second during outbursts. In outbursts, they could be as bright as the brightest system here, almost as bright. So this is also an important property of CVs, that they are four methods of finding CVs. One is by one is by the variability, and by variability it means eruptions. By color, blue. There's one which I. There's by spectrometry, and one is by X-rays. Okay, but the most powerful, I would say, since most of the systems, especially short periods, for reason that I will mention in a moment, are dwarf novae, means erupting systems. This is also what you have to model when you model the selection effects, that you find them because they erupt.
Can I ask you, what would be a typical MDOT in that region? A typical.
Okay. I will come to that, but since you say was the coordinator, was to know. Okay, the typical M dot above, the gap is, I would say, 2 times 10 to the minus 9 solar mass per year. Okay, and this is the typical below the gap, the typical, if you can say it's typical, okay, typical would be an order of magnitude lower, or even lower, because it can be even lower. So it will be 10 to the minus 10, 10 to the minus 11 solar mass per year. Okay, you will see in a moment. But I mean, if you have another question, sorry. Okay. Now there's a very old problem that mentioned by Lars. Is this property of having a gap universal? And there's been a long, still ongoing discussion. Do the magnetic system follow the same pattern? And this I took from a paper, from a review paper by Boris Gensicke at the Strasbourg conference, that points out something in which I am personally interested, but I won't bother with that. Here you have the non-magnetic are here. The polars, which means strongly magnetic system, which I will mention, that the magnetic field of the white dwarf is so strong that prevents formation of a disk, so they don't have this system. And so-called intermediate polars that are magnetic in the sense that you can observe either directly or the effect of the magnetic field, but they possess, it's not universal, but they might have disks. Some of them have disks, and all the polars, in fact, could be defined as the system in which the magnetic field of the white dwarf is so strong that the system is synchronous. The magnetic field synchronizes the rotation of the white dwarf with the orbital motion. And as you know from Ed Stock, the secondary is already synchronous. How?
It's order of magnitude
of the strength. Oh, the strength.
Yeah.
In Gauss, sorry, if you yeah. In Gauss, it was believed for a long time that it is less than 10 to the 8 Gauss, but now we know that they are. Okay, I would say I would prefer in magnetic moments. Okay, so it is 10 to the 33, 10 to the 34 for the polars, and say 1 or 2 orders of magnitude lower for intermediate polars. Okay? But in magnetic fields, you get, there's no difference between the field. There was believed, and in fact, I took part I published a paper in which Hi, Lorne. That was explaining why you don't see why magnetic fields. I had a very good explanation with colleagues why magnetic fields in CVs are, in white dwarfs in CVs are lower than in the field, and the explanation was perfect but irrelevant, because one found exactly the same magnetic fields as in the field. So this is just, since it's a tutorial, it is for students, and somebody cited Tommy Gold about, you know, that every about, okay, so this was one example. This was a very beautiful, very coherent explanation, but it simply was wrong. in fact, was not even an explanation, because the fact we were trying to explain, in fact, is not a fact. Okay, so now, if you look just, you know, by the eye, and I understand it's a method used sometimes in studying supernovae type 1a, you will say it is different. But if you take now the cumulative distribution, then you see something very interesting. Namely, that if you take now the short dashes are the what is normally called magnetic CVs, which means these two. And so you have the you see that all curves except for this one, but clearly here there is a deficient of systems. All the others are similar, and you get this difference only if you include part of the so-called non-magnetic system. They are called SW sex, nothing to do with sex, it's sextants for people who are not astronomers. They are probably intrinsically the system of VY sculptories. There are systems that I claim with Jean-Marie Amélie that they are magnetic. And interestingly, for a completely different reason, if you put them into the magnetic systems, nothing to do with our suggestion, it just happened that we have reason to believe that they are magnetic. So if polars, intermediate polars, and the so-called SW6 stars are considered to be as a sample of magnetic system, then there is a difference. So I would say the question is open. It's open. It's a difference because still the question of SW6, are they magnetic or not, is still there's indirect evidence, but not direct. So
the question here is whether both the magnetics have a gap or not.
Yeah, the question is if the same distribution. Okay, yeah, because the minimum period is practically the same, but do they have the gap or not? So I think the question is open, but just in case, in the rest of the studies, the magnetic systems will be out of the sample, not totally, because this SW6 will be in the sample. So it is sort of.
The white sulfur stars, you think they're magnetic?
Sorry.
The white sulfur stars.
Magnetic? Yeah. I can explain to you, but this is not the subject of my talk. And interestingly, there's a different sort of. Indication. Okay, so let's forget about magnetic systems. And this is the answer to your question from 84. Joe Patterson, long time ago, just plotted the logarithm of the accretion rate or mass transfer rate. It's not clear. Okay, it's ambiguous. You should always remember that mass transfer rate is, you never observe mass transfer rate. You observe luminosities, you observe other things, but you don't observe it. So this is deduced. But clearly, there are two things that are visible here that I will address in the rest of my talk. Clearly, if you take the accretion rate below the gap, below 2 hours, are lower than above the gap. Okay, some of them have very high, okay, I don't know if this is, I don't think that this is, I think it's old nova or something. This is also for people who are, this is an old nova GK pair. Okay, clearly there are two groups of systems. They have different accretion rates, or transfer rate, let's call it transfer rate, below the gap and above the gap. And it was already known there, then, that this transfer rate can be explained easily with no big problems if the evolution is driven by gravitational wave radiation. I think it was mentioned by. It was also clear that this accretion rate or mass transfer cannot be explained by gravitational radiation because paradoxically the simplest thing in the stellar evolution of the binary is the general relativity, because you cannot play with parameters. Okay, it's given. It's I wouldn't say because Ed would be offended. It's God given, but it's given by nature, and you cannot play with parameters. Okay, you can play with. It's not. You will see there is a problem with the value of the minimum period, and of course, the formula that is used, the famous Landau-Lipschitz formula, assumes that you have in your system 2-point particles, and there was a suspicion that maybe the fact that the secondary is approximated by a point particle could slightly change the value of the minimum period. I will explain why, but in fact the effects of, and there were paper by several people saying, maybe there is something with the structure that is, cannot experience a point particle. But in the end the calculation was done and the effect is, one at the level 1%. So it's not of really fundamental interest. Okay, so there's one thing, and also there's a second fact that you see, there's a big scatter. The given orbital period, there's a big scatter of mass transfer. Part of it, of course, is due to systematic errors, to the method. As I said, you don't observe directly. But still, even taking this into account, there is, instead of that, you can put, for example, the absolute magnitude. This is what Brian Warner preferred to do. He used to refuse to put mass transfer. He was put the observable, the absolute magnitude. And you have a big scatter. So the yes?
Thinking of presenting, but it relates back to a very important issue of, whether you lose matter, whether you don't.
Exactly. Yes, 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 yes. Yes, yes, yes.
So I wanted to ask, there are all these predictions for different white dwarf masses. What is the range at which you have Novae, and what is the repetition time, the time between Nova explosions? This I know is an old plot. I wonder, to your knowledge, has someone tried to reproduce this to check the Nova repetition rate with the large data set we have now?
Maybe Lon would know.
Okay.
I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer, but Lon, I think, knows the answer, so it's good. I don't know the answer if somebody tried recently to do that. And of course, I agree, it's an important question. But here, I want to show the weaknesses of the model. So the model, the answer to the question why rates are higher above 3 hours is that there must be an additional driving mechanism, that makes the binary lose the angular momentum. And of course, it's not a mystery, because I checked that Ed described in detail the magnetic braking mechanism. So you are supposed to know what the magnetic braking is, because I'm not going to repeat his tutorial. And it is based, but I will mention it later, of course, it is based on an analogy with so-called Skumanich law of isolated rotating stars. In fact, all the mechanism goes back to Schatzman in the early 60s, when he found the breaking, magnetic breaking of the sun. Okay. Sorry, one thing you have to... And also you have to explain the scatter. So one easy way of explaining the scatter is that the evolution, the magnetic breaking, concerns the secular evolution. That means timescales of 10 to the 8 years, or 10 to the 9 years. And fluctuations, it could be on much shorter timescales. And in fact, these Dewar Sculptoris stars, they show, they stop transferring mass for months or years, for example. So, and so there's nothing wrong in thinking that some things are happening in the secondary on the time scale set up to 10 to the 5 years. That would give this. Of course, this is very unpleasant because it gives you just another free parameter. Of course, there was a mechanism proposed by Mike Schara a long time ago, related with NOVI, that after the NOVA explosion, the secondary or the system would go to hibernation. It means that the secondary would recede from the Roche lobe and sleep there, be hibernated for years. I never believed in this model.
So Jean-Pierre, the other thing I thought of, well, change advertising, but so Dean Townsend's thesis, right, use the T effective observation, because in the
yes.
gap, you see the white dwarf in quiescence.
Yes.
You can measure T effective and you observe it.
Yes.
So what Dean did was to ask, can we get the time average end up, the actual time average?
Yes, yes, yes.
T effective observation.
Yes.
And of course, you look at the T effective observation. Much less scattering those data.
Exactly.
Gap, very narrow range.
Yeah, I would just, yeah.
And above the period gap, they're much hotter,
uh-huh.
and there's also not that much scatter. And that we think is because it knows about the time average end on this long time period.
Exactly. I was just.
Sure. So there's evidence that there is a long term, what you're saying, supporting what you're saying.
I wanted to mention your work with I didn't know the recent work, but you did. I mean, there's work by Deloy and yeah. Okay, but this was something. Okay, that you can also measure the effective temperature, and this confirmed this in a way the same thing. The difference in the transfer rates. Okay, but since you, but I had just in mind, that's why I came back on. Okay. There's also another problem. I said hydrogen secondaries, small masses less than one solar mass, they should be in principle non-evolved. They should be close to the main sequence. Now this is an interesting work by Baraf and Kolb. In fact, it's based on a paper by Boyerman, Baraf and Kolb, that decided to compare to put on such a diagram period, not accretion rate or something, but the spectral types. There was a campaign of getting the right spectral types, and the spectral types based not only on colors but also on the lines, very very carefully. There was a reference set of spectral types and compared the secondaries in CV. So there's a selection effect because, of course, the stars selected were such that you could determine the spectral type. And of course, at very short period, you practically don't see the secondary is so weak, unless it's a magnetic system, or unless you are lucky enough that you can see it during the quiescence of the dwarf node. And there are various lines here. One, this line here, this one line here is the main sequence. And you see that. For periods that are larger than 6 hours, you don't find many systems that are close to the main sequence. They seem to be of the wrong spectral type. So, for example, at 7 hours, these guys are M whatever.
K something, and they should be K4
or even less.
I don't understand how you can plot the main sequence on an axis that has period.
Okay. This I saw that Ed explained, right? Or yeah, it's and
the full line is the main sequence.
Sorry,
the full line.
No, but not the full line. This line.
This line.
Yeah, yeah. This is the standard model, of course. I will show the formula in a moment. Okay, you will understand. Yes.
And what about the luminosity from the this, in a study like this, it must be difficult to separate out.
I'm saying there's a selection effect in which they've chosen a system in which either the, which is true for the long system, the you can see the secondary because it's big and it's luminous, or the other system where dwarf novae in which you can see clearly the secondary, if you can see it, because there's practically no luminosity from the disk. Okay, so in this sense, you know, it's the system are selected by the visibility of the secondary. Okay, it's not always the case, of course, and it's never the case at very short period. Or, I mean, if you see, it's very difficult to determine the spectral type. So they have the wrong spectral type. Now, they have later spectral types, which means that they are more evolved. Okay, people who are familiar, familiar with single star evolution can find it strange. Because, of course, we know that, I mean, evolved, it means that they already have burned hydrogen in the center. So they increase the molecular weight in the center, which means that the central temperature increases, right? The central temperature, from the virial theorem, is mu m over r. This is the central temperature. If you increase mu, you increase the temperature. So if you increase the temperature, you increase the luminosity, and you increase the radius. It is a well-known effect that when you burn hydrogen in the nucleus of the star, in the center of the star slightly expands. So evolved star should be hotter, should be earlier spectral type, right? Carlos, you are looking at me. Yes, you agree with that? So why I'm saying that something with a later type is more evolved? Okay, the answer is because systems, the stars here, they cannot have the radii they want. The radius is limited by the Roche load. Okay, so in fact, for a given mass, the star will be hotter and earlier type. For a given period, for a given radius, there will be cooler and of later type. Okay? Because they have to be smaller, so they are the cooler ones. Okay? It's different between a given mass and a given period. Sorry, I don't know why I'm talking just to you, but you are looking at me with he was looking at me with surprise. No, he was looking with surprise, so I address you because this is something that is, if you are not used to evolution of the secondary, then secondaries that are filling the Roche load, you might think. So these are systems that are evolved. Okay, so they are not on the main sequence. So, of course, it seems nowadays this is not the majority, but they are there. So part of the scatter would be explained not by fluctuation, but by different history. Okay, we'll come back to this because what the other curves represent various laws of magnetic breaking. But let's go to the principle. I just recalling formulae that are in Ed's lecture, but this is how the orbital separation evolves under the mass transfer from one to one one star to another, and the loss of angular momentum. And this, of course, this is the Roche lobe radius evolves in a similar way, and this tells you that if J dot is zero, then the mass transfer in where Q, the mass ratio is less than one, would expand the orbit, and also it's almost the same criterion, but also would expand the Roche lobe. Okay, so if If the mass transfer were conservative, you wouldn't have evolution for main sequence stars. Now, if you now assume that the secondary field is a Schwarzschild and is on the main sequence, and you assume this very simple, it's an approximation, of course, because there is an exponent close to one, and you assume that, then you may plot this, and of course you can relate it to the orbital period, etc. That's the how we can plot the orbital period on the versus the main sequence on the other diagram. Okay, you can replace this. This is equivalent to saying what to the period orbital. You know, there's this famous Kepler law that permits to connect it. So when you are plotting main sequence on a diagram with the period, you are using this two relation. Okay, if you are more refined, you put the real mass radius relation for the main sequence, right? Okay, you just in case you didn't know why the main sequence relation is of this form from the first principle. Okay, you burn hydrogen on the main sequence. As I'm not going to explain, I'm talking now to this is a tutorial to students. The hydrogen, of course, everybody here knows that hydrogen reactions are very temperature sensitive. So this cannot change very much. The TC has to be in the right region to burn hydrogen. So this should be roughly constant. The sun is on the main sequence. So we give this. Okay, in fact, there's a 0.06 or something. Okay. But I wanted to...
10-15 minutes, is that good?
I'm still at the beginning, but I can go... No, once I explain the principle, then I can go very fast. Okay?
I just want to be sure.
I will stop. I will stop at before 11. Okay? I don't have to tell everything. I told you it's a tutorial. It's a tutorial. I don't have to. If you want another one, you can have. To. Okay. So what is important now that from that you can deduce, you can connect the mass transfer rate timescale. You have another time scale which is the Kelvin Helmholtz or the thermal time scale. And what is important is in fact these two relations. This one is assuming that the angular momentum loss is given gravitational radiation. And you can see they are very close. In fact, they are equal at around 1.5 hours with 80 minutes. Okay. This has been noticed a long time ago, and in fact, this is the explanation of the minimum period. There are also one thing you see immediately that the Kelvin Helmholtz, you don't see it from here, but goes like the square of the mass, so it's decreasing like the square of the mass. You don't see it quite easily here, but the time scale of the mass transfer rate goes like the inverse of the mass to some power. So they will cross somewhere. When the secondary loses the mass, they will become equal. Now, this is the explanation of the orbital period, and this is how it works. Everybody is used to stars in thermal equilibrium. Here stars are not in thermal equilibrium, because what is happening? The secondary loses a mass that is transferred to the primary. its first reaction will depend in this case, since it has a convective envelope, it will on a dynamical time expand. But it's not important, even if the shot slightly shrank, the rest would be the same. The loss of mass lowers the temperature, the central temperature. So the star is oversized for its mass. So the star wants to contract to get the right radius to increase the temperature. Now if, and then it can it does it on the Kelvin Helmholtz on the thermal time. But now if the mass transfer rate, the mass transfer time is of the same order, before it can get to the right position, it will have more mass removed. So it gets out of the main sequence, it's more and more oversized because it doesn't have time to contract. So it's out of thermal equilibrium. Its surface luminosity is bigger than the nuclear luminosity. And more and more. In the end, here, so it goes, when the two times are equal, there's almost the nuclear luminosity is unimportant. In fact, it cools it cools by the classical Kelvin-Helmholtz process. This is just an example where nuclear luminosity is not important. And it's easy to see if using a simple model, polytropic model of the star, don't have time to do it, that in fact now, after this minimum, it will, and this is what gives the minimum, it will expand as a reaction to the mass loss. Because it's no longer a star in the sense of a star burning some nuclear. It becomes more and more. It also becomes degenerate. It's just a coincidence, I would say. So in the end, it will return to the degenerate branch of stars. If it survives, because of course the masses are then very 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 low. So this is the explanation of the minimum period. It's simply the star gets more and more out of thermal equilibrium. In the end, it is so far from the main sequence that it is expanding.
Yeah, I think it is important to emphasize what you said, which is that it is a coincidence that this happened due to Brown.
Right. Yeah. Just I
Brown work physics does not know about gravitation.
Absolutely. That's why I mentioned that. This is a tutorial, and I know there are some confusion about this. Okay.
And also, it's interesting because degeneracy.
No, no, exactly. I think it's a coincidence, and that is why. No, no, yeah, okay. Lorne, don't interrupt me because then you won't start at 11. Sorry. No, sorry. So, what was fantastic in this, that when for Paczynski, who first published the paper, he got just taking he scaled the gravitational wave loss low and put an F, and F equal 1 was the Landau-Lipschitz formula, and when you are putting F equal 1, you get 80 minutes, as in observations. However, years later, a problem appeared. The problem was this is the distribution. This is the evolution, mass transfer rate as function of period. So you get the period minimum here, and the fraction of systems. This is the problem I mentioned. First of all, you get a period which is much shorter. Okay, it's less than 10%, but still, there's no way nowadays to get it close to 80 minutes. And also, there's not this bloody spike. You don't see any spike. And most of the system should be here. Okay, I have to hurry up. And now, so this was below the gap. Above the gap, there is magnetic braking with the standard model is with the Skumanich law, And now people are playing with this law. There was a Pensonneau with was proportional to omega, and then Ivanova and Tam proportional to omega 2, and I don't know, maybe somebody will put omega 2.15, etc. This is not totally innocent. I'm making fun, of course, but there seems to be observation of isolated stars that show that they don't follow really this Kumanich law at low masses. And then what is happening? The mechanism of producing the gap is practically the same as for producing the minimum period. In fact, it could be the same, as you will see in a moment. What is happening that also, since the mass transfer rates are much higher, 10 times or more higher than below the gap, also the two times are very, very close to each other. I will show you probably. Yeah, this is an old calculation, and you see this is the radius of the main sequence. This is the actual radius, and you see that, and the gap is here. The actual radius of the star also above the gap, because it's driven by the magnetic braking high rate, is not in thermal equilibrium. It's not at the main sequence. Now, if for some reason you stop magnetic braking, you interrupt it, the star will find itself oversized and will go back to the main sequence, because then nothing will prevent her. Before, of course, the gravitational wave take over. But so the idea, this is an old idea, was to say that it's a coincidence or not coincidence, was pointed out by Rob Robinson. By the way, just anecdote, the minimum period was, the suggestion was first made by Wojtek Szemiński, who is an observer, who told Papaczynski, you know, it must be something with the star getting out of the thermal equilibrium. And the expression for the gap was suggested by Rob Robinson. So this is how to show that observers, good observers, very good observers, can play a role of inciting and inspiring theorists.
I remember that Peter Eggleton said that already when he knew that there were two CVs, he saw that there was a period.
Very good. Yeah. So, okay, this is another example where artificially the magnetic braking is multiplied by factor C. So if you interrupt, okay, and the idea was that the you don't have the mass here now. The masses are around 0.2 solar masses, and this is where the star becomes totally convective. And then you can argue and make calculations. You know, the dynamo changes, the magnetic field changes, etc. The structure, instead of being dipolar, becomes multipolar. So either the magnetic break is interrupted, or it is much more reduced. And then you get the gap, because the star don't fill anymore the Roche lobe. They are shrinking to the main sequence. The Roche lobe is also shrinking, because there's always gravitational radiation. And when the star is back, more or less back at the main sequence, the Roche lobe will catch up. It's not shrunk in the Roche lobe, and you restart after the gap. So it's perfect. I mean, it's simple. There's even a physical reason, fully convective star. I will skip this. But it's a total disaster. This is the paper I mentioned by Pretorius et al. This is they have several conclusions. They took the PG polarogram grade CV distributed like that. They are distributed. This is the distribution. They took into account all, I think, selection effects. And the conclusion that you can read here, which says that the standard model doesn't work, is based on this. This is the intrinsic distribution made from produced by the standard model. The black stuff are the period bouncer. They are systems that are already over, that are below the period minimum. They are coming back. They are going to their branch. They found almost no. This is the standard model applied to this sample. Clearly, most of the systems are below the gap. Here they are not. There's a lot of periodic bouncers that are not observed. Maybe one or two, but not, you know.
Can you just tell Jean-Pierre, what are the two plots? The one on the left, you got two histograms.
Left is observed.
This is the observed. This is the calculated.
For the, only, there's 4, 8, 10, 12, 15 systems on that, in that same plot. Those are all...
This is a bigger sample, but with the same properties or something. With the same... That's a good question,
I think they got this. They said this to minimize the observational bias. And,
yeah,
and the selection effects, which
the
are
selection
the,
effect, but this
key here.
I would check your
okay,
your.
This could just be the PG. The middle plot.
No. This is the PGs.
This is just
yeah.
The PG sample.
Yeah, but okay. The No, you're right. There's more. I mean, here there are 27, and here clearly...
Right. Are there,
the full sample.
Yeah, it was with the full sample. Okay, I have to check the... I was not very careful in reading, sorry.
But one question, I mean, these are selected, looking across the sky, but globular clusters are well-defined regions where we can look for CVs.
Yeah, but they are totally useless for binary evolution, because most of the CVs are not... don't have the same evolution. They are found by capture or by three-body interaction. So.
But today, these are some calculations that Phil Rapoport and I did in the early 90s, when people weren't finding CVs in globular clusters, and the conjecture was
deformed. Yeah, I know, but now they found plenty. Yeah.
Very effective. So we did the...
Yeah, I know, I remember. Yeah.
But the main thing to do is the evolution.
Yeah.
Using these codes that had been developed in the years prior to that. And what we found was that basically the CVs that you would be seeing would be CVs whose present state was dominated by the fact that they've been evolving as regular CVs for billions of years, and they were these very low luminosity systems. Now, I don't think anybody, now that we have great statistics, so for years people said, well, that's just wrong because there aren't CVs in a lot of the clusters.
No, they are. Yeah, I know.
Now, we do have a population of very low luminosity or low M.
Yeah, sure, I know.
In a lot of the clusters, some of which are almost certainly CVs, some of which are PS,
right.
I don't know that anybody has really, now that we have big statistics, done a clean separation or tried to really look at that population
The fact that they form through some other mechanism is now lost in the mist of time because they've been evolving as ordinary CVs for a while. Since I have to finish in five minutes, Jean-Pierre, I'm sorry, but the figure on the right hand side. I don't understand. Is that a simulation?
This is the result of the standard model, which says
cross selection effect.
Yeah, sure.
Correct.
Yeah. This is observation. This is the result of the. This is the intrinsic.
They claim they have enough statistics from the
It's very convincing. I'm totally convinced. I mean, I don't want to hear anymore about it. Maybe from you, but no, it is. Look, it is. No, it is. There's absolutely no way of explaining this discrepancy with selection effect. Okay? Don't forget, these are the brightest system. We have to invent a selection effect which hides the bright system and show you the faint system. I mean, come on.
But maybe we're looking at different populations.
No, they look at the...
Well, it's clear.
No, I think it's not the first. I think it's the most rigorous. Even if I didn't... You have the same problem with low mass exterbinaries. There's a problem with they don't show any period gap. Okay, these are the commutative histogram. I just want to show there's another problem from a recent paper by Lev and collaborator, that if you take if you assume the magnetic braking is operating, this is the limit of stability of the disk is instability. Above, all systems are stable. Below, they're unstable. These are black hole binaries, short period black hole binaries. They're all unstable. According to the population synthesis with magnetic braking, they should be all stable. If you switch off the magnetic braking, they are all unstable. So
I'm trying to say one thing. So these are the points are black hole binaries?
All black hole binaries, yeah. It's a population calculated by this guy here with the help of Heisen element. And to the end, circumbinary disk. Why they would they're interesting? Because if you have a circumbinary disk, a viscous disk, like this, it's similar to the inner disk, but it would be outer disk, and you have a binary like here, this is a magnetic binary, so there's no disk inside. Then by gravitational torques, it will be coupled to the external disk, and this will be a sink of angular momentum from the binary. It's an old idea. You say it's Huang
1963.
And it has very interesting properties. This is from a press release, as you could guess, because in four systems, I don't have time to go into details, but Between 3 and 8, this is a Spitzer result. This is something that doesn't belong to the traditional CV. There's no place for such a thing. And the same is here, okay? There are some problems. If you want to fit an external disk, it's not exactly what you see, but I don't think it is really serious. There is really evidence for something, for a dusty structure. It's not clear it is flat, it's not clear it's a disk, outside the system.
Why does it have to be outside the system?
Sorry?
Like, given these measurements, are you confident that geometrically it's outside the system and not something?
Oh, because we know what's inside the system. It would be a normal disk that cannot emit this. It cannot be the secondary. So you need a very low temperature. So you play. This is by this argument. There's no geometrical or this is just by the temperatures, surface and argument.
Nothing unusual about the secondary in these cases.
Absolutely no. Oh.
Time's up.
We have ways.
Yeah. Okay. So this is just since you asked the question that this is a model that is used by a series of papers, and this is just you add the this is the normal breaking, so it will be gravitational waves or magnetic breaking, and this is the additional breaking by the external disk. And this is the column density, this is the viscosity. Of course, it's very much parameter dependent. The main parameters are alpha and delta. Alpha is the usual alpha parameter from accretion disk. Delta is the amount of mass that goes from the secondary to the mass transfer to the disk. This is a so-called consequential, because angular momentum loss, because it's part of the mass transfer, the mass transfer by the other mechanism that goes to the circumbinary disk. And just quickly, there's a big influence of the how the system evolves depending on alpha, and even bigger depending on delta. And for example, the paper I mentioned at the beginning assumes that delta is twice this value, which means the system will disappear in 1 million years. But so this is just, I don't have time to show it. What is interesting in this is now that this mechanism, much stronger than the other, depends on the mass of the mass. D here is not disk, is the donor. Okay. That you have these trajectories and they have minimum periods since now the driving is much stronger, you have minimum periods well above the period gap. And to make things long, thing short, this I will drop. You get this distribution, which is quite reasonably represents the observed distribution. With one thing, you have to choose two different deltas for longer and for shorter periods. Which, if delta depends on the mass transfer rate, is not totally stupid. But of course, this is an assumption. You have also to assume that many systems are born in the gap, which is also not stupid. Nothing prevents a system to be born in the gap. And you get this interesting and reasonable this distribution, helium white dwarf, carbon oxygen white dwarf, and there are also some oxygen and neon white dwarfs, a small fraction. It has very interesting properties that I don't have time to discuss. These are the dwarf novae. Just want to show the conclusion. The standard model does not work. I don't say that improving magnetic braking mechanism leads anywhere, because first of all, the minimum period has nothing to do with magnetic braking. This could be a solution. But maybe we are missing something much more important.
This would require that all systems have a certain magnetic of some kind.
Sorry?
This would require that all cataclysmic variables have a certain binary digit.
I'm not sure that all.
Most.
Yeah, probably.
I think we have to stop.
Yeah, sure. I stopped myself.